They step into the biggest shows with the biggest names. And sometimes they get written on or off in a moment's notice. It's time to find out all the dramatic details of what it's like to be a guest star. With your host, Pete Ferrero.
Let's go.
This is super exciting. I'm doing another one of the episodes of Guest Star, and I'm being joined by David Lasher. I mean, growing up as a person who watched a lot of 90s things, you are all over my television in the 90s. How you doing, man? How's it going?
It's going very well. Thank you.
Yeah.
Nice to be with you.
It's cool, man. I mean, I was going through and I watched a lot of this stuff. You know, we're all talking about the 90s so much now, right? I mean, it is weird to think that finally the stuff that I grew up with is now getting its due, because I feel like forever it was like the 60s and the 70s. We heard about that. And I love that, too. Don't get me wrong. But the 90s is in full swing. This is an era that you were working in. Is it weird to see it all coming back to life like this?
No, I kind of get it. You know, the 90s are our kids' 60s, you know?
Yes.
And it was a good time, really. I get why people are nostalgic for it. It was sort of an innocent time. It was a lot less complicated, you know, without social media and a million streaming services, and everyone's sort of, you know, they came together on the same shows and things in pop culture, where everything now is so fragmented. Everyone watched Full House, you know, everyone, you know, gathered around the same things. And yeah, I understand the nostalgia.
It is like the last of the era where like you were kind of talking about, where we all watched Roseanne or Growing Pains. It was must-see television, and there wasn't as many platforms. Like now we're in this era of so much content. You know, there's almost too much content. I don't know, like we could talk about two things that we're both watching on two different streaming platforms and never have heard of either one of the things. It's a very weird time, right?
Right. And they're both hit shows, and you might be completely unaware that one is even available.
Exactly. But going back to this era of stuff, you know, I talked to Monica Lacey, and anyway, she was talking to me about when in the 90s, that there's a group of kids that all kind of knew each other and hung out with each other, that they were all aware of each other, and they would go to like soda parties together. This is years ago. Were you involved in the soda party world?
Oh my God. Yeah. That guy named Alfie, I think his name was.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Through like, yeah, underage actor parties.
Yeah. And like Brian Austin Green told me that he used to go to them. Lindsay Price used to go to them. So were you friendly with the group of those kids?
Yeah, very much. I moved out here in 91. And I think Roseanne was like my first job. And I, you know, you said you watched it, but
I
had this funny scene where I'm hitting on Aunt Jackie. I had a great scene with Laurie Metcalf, you know.
And I love it, man. I watched. I want to ask you about it. So you come to LA. You're acting before you get to LA, or where does the acting bug hit you, I guess?
No, in New York. I grew up in New York. Mm-hmm. And I was doing theater and commercials starting in like ninth grade. And I really didn't tell my friends. I would go from high school to the train station into the city, and I'd run around on auditions, and I just loved it. You know, it was like total freedom for me. And then I started, I got a bunch of commercials. I did some off-Broadway shows. And then I got a TV pilot for NBC when I was in 10th grade. And then it didn't go. It was like a spinoff of the movie Stand By Me. And it was...
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, they had really high hopes for it. And when it didn't go, I was crushed. It was like my first lesson of like, just because you got a pilot, you know, you're only, you know, a tenth of the way there.
Yeah.
And then in 11th grade, I got the Nickelodeon series, Hey Dude, which Nickelodeon had just started, really.
So does it start with Hey Dude?
Really, the acting starts with Hey Dude, yeah.
I mean, this show is, talk about like phenomenon. I mean, when I talk to people and tell them that I was going to interview you, this is the show that everybody wants me to ask you about. And like, there's so many other shows that you've done since, but this one really has a special place in everybody's heart, maybe because it's in that specific time period where you had to be watching Nickelodeon at that time period and you get it. So tell me about Hey Dude. So everybody who wants to know about it will be happy to hear this.
Well, Hey Dude was Nickelodeon's first scripted sitcom.
Right.
And we shot in Tucson, Arizona, and it was probably, I think, April of my junior year. I turned 16 on the set, and it was myself and Christine Taylor, who, you know, we became very, very yeah. close, and Kelly Brown, and all the Nickelodeon, you know, moms and dad, you know, the executives were all there. We were all at a hotel and we were filming at this ranch, and it was all physical comedy. You know, I was falling off horses, falling into water troughs, dumping food everywhere. And, you know, it was kind of like the John Ritter School of Acting. It was,
I love it.
It was a great time and great training for me. And we shot an episode in 5 days. So it was like a script read and then a rehearsal, then 3 days of shooting. It moved very, very fast. It was just a great time.
And it becomes, you know, a big show. As I said, if you were, you know, watching Nickelodeon, you know, all this stuff. Did this get you recognized a lot, this show, when you first started doing it?
I didn't have that expectation at all because, you know, cable TV at the time in whatever, 1990, it was sort of like the, you know, the unwanted step sibling of network TV. So, but, you know, that being said, if you were the right age in 1990, like if you were between the ages of 6 or 7 and 12, they all watched it. It was like, I don't know what the share was, but I mean, even to this day, if I run into someone who's now, you know, whatever, they're between 30 and 40, they're Hey Dude fanatics. Like it brings them back to a time. But yeah, we did get recognized. Like we did the MTV, Nickelodeon Kids Choice Awards. And I remember being on stage and realizing, wow, people are watching this.
So is it hard at that time to be like, I'm just shooting this show, you're just shooting this show?
Yeah, right? In Arizona, totally disconnected, you know?
No one is watching this show. We're just having a blast on set, filming this fun thing. Right. And then you come out, you know, out of Tucson, and it's like, oh man, everybody's watching this. At least when I run into the people that are watching Nickelodeon, they're all watching the show, they know this show.
Yeah. That was shocking to me. It was like a lesson of, you know, how powerful it is what we do. You know, we could film a show and we're in our little bubble, but it gets distributed across the world. And that was my first lesson in that. And I'm proud of the show. It was, you know, great writers. Graham Yost went on to do amazing things, and Lisa Melamed, and you know, it was a really talented group of people that were kind of, you know, earning their chops or paying their dues and learning how to make comedy.
You know, you were doing this show, you said, with Christine Taylor and a bunch of other kid actors at the time. So is it a shared experience where you're all in it together, kind of a thing, where it's like, we're making this and you're all realizing the success of the show? What is it like working with those other actors at that time?
Yeah, Christine and I were about the same age. Kelly was a little older, and for Christine and I, it was very much like a simultaneous ride. And she was the only one that, you know, understood what we were going through. And we were just so psyched that people liked it. I mean, we had no expectation for it. And the fact that it kept going and going was such a bonus. But, you know, I did 13 episodes. I came home for the summer, I believe, to be with my friends. Went back, filmed 13 more episodes. And then I auditioned for an NBC show. Mm-hmm. And it was a sitcom with Robert Mitchum.
Okay. Mm.
Playing my grandfather, with Juliette Lewis and Ben Savage playing my brother and sister. I mean, totally off the wall. Crazy.
Crazy.
I mean,
Robert
Mitchum in a sitcom and Juliette Lewis.
I know.
And Nickelodeon wouldn't let me out of my contract.
Oh my God.
And my father happened to be a partner at a big law firm, and his firm represented Viacom. And he found there was a loophole in the contract. And I left Hey Dude. I went and did 13 episodes of this show for NBC, mm-hmm. called The Family for Joe.
Yeah.
And when that got canceled after 13 episodes, I missed everybody back in Tucson. They were still going. And I asked if I could come back, and they said yes. And it was so, like, I don't know. They were so understanding, you know?
What was the experience like going from doing a this Nickelodeon show to going to an NBC show? Because it's a totally different world, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, the dressing rooms were nicer. The pay was obviously better. There were a lot, just, you know, the perks and the things that don't matter.
Yeah.
But everything that did matter was exactly the same. The rehearsals, the, you know, collaboration with your director and your other actors, everything I had learned working on Hey Dude served me so well on A Family for Joe. Although the one thing is that it was filmed in front of a live audience.
It was Hey, and Hey Dude was not.
No. Hey Dude right. was remote. We were took our time. We could do 100 takes. Nobody watching. And the first episode of A Family for Joe, they were doing the cast intros. And right after that, you go into the scene one, and I started vomiting in a garbage can.
I get backstage. It. Well, it's like live theater in a weird way. You know
oh
what I mean?
My God.
Yeah. Live theater. Where you
live can- theater, but you know that, you know, 20 million people are going to see it. I had to get over that hump.
Yeah. And also it's, you know, it's live theater, but you can cut and whatnot. And you don't know, you know it all, but you can't like, it can't connect those dots with that audience being there. Right. That must've been, especially because with Hey Dude, you guys were all kind of doing your thing. And if it didn't work, you just did it again.
Right. We were just playing.
Yeah.
This was like, you know, Brandon Tartikoff sitting there in the front row, like the NBC suite of executives are staring at you, and it's a different, it was a lot more pressure. But I think after that first, after I vomited, I was fine for the next 12.
Right. okay. So you do Hey Dude, and now you're going to start doing some guest star stuff. And you walk into Roseanne, which we just kind of started talking about, and that's a, you know, it's an epic show. Everybody's watching it. It's really becoming pretty popular at the time. What is it like walking into that set? I mean, I know you're an actor, so you try not to be affected by some of that, but you have to say, oh my God, this is an ABC huge show. And here you are, you know, coming in to have this scene with Aunt Jackie. And I think you have something with a little something with, what's her character's name? Darlene, yeah. Right? Yeah. Or Sarah. Right, yeah.
Over.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what's Roseanne like? Yeah.
Yeah, it was a little surreal because she was, they were at their peak at that point, and she had Tom Arnold around. She was in the tabloids all the time, and she was very eccentric, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
I was intimidated. But, you know, I was just, you know, you learn to be around that type of stuff, you know. I did Full House after that, then I did Step by Step, you know, with, you know, Patrick Duffery and Suzanne Summers, who at the time, like, to me were like huge stars. And you just, you just realize they're actors. They're regular people showing up to do a job, just like you. You know, you learn that pretty quick.
Of course. What did you think of the Roseanne experience? You said that she was in the tabloids. I think, I don't know when she sang the national anthem in that week. That was a huge deal. But I feel like when you get there, there is something going on with Roseanne that is, you know, epically big in tabloid world. Did that add
I think she brought Tom Arnold on as like the head writer, or something had happened because he was somewhat running the show. And I didn't remember like who to listen to, but he was very outspoken. Mm-hmm. And he was sort of her mouthpiece. And I think that's what was going on at the time. She was dating Tom Arnold and just brought him on to run her number one show.
Yeah. I mean, that must be so. And your scene is awesome. Like you go and you hit on Aunt Jackie, and it's all a setup to try to get her out of the party. If you
right.
Yeah.
She's flattered, right?
Yeah, she's so flattered. And then you like refer to her as the old broad, I think, which you probably can never say today.
Oh, and she's seriously still one of the greatest actresses around, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. What about Sarah Gilbert and whatnot? Are you friendly with her at that time too?
You know, we weren't friends, but we saw each other around. Mm. It was more like, then I did 90210 and that changed everything for me.
I want to get to that. And I'm going to ask you about that. Talk me through Full House though, because that's another one of these huge ABC shows. Somebody told me that the Camerons were always very sweet and whatnot. Did you have that a similar experience?
Yeah, I was really intimidated on that set. Candace was a sweetheart and we ended up doing a movie together a few years later. But I think they were, you know, a sitcom gets to a point when they're in season 5 or 6 or 7, where those actors literally just walk on stage, do their rehearsal, and they want to get out.
Right.
And it wasn't like Hey Dude. It wasn't like Family for Joe, where everyone's hanging out and excited, and you know, there wasn't that vibe. And I've seen that on a show, you know, where I've been on it in season 5, 6, or 7, and the guest stars that come on, I feel for them. I'm like, you know, I'm sorry that we all don't, you know, have this excitement that you have coming on, you know, for one episode. But I felt like whether it was you know who was awesome is Saget.
Bob Saget.
Saget, yeah. And I have remained friends and we have good mutual friends. He was the kindest, mm-hmm. sweetest guy who seemed like he understood and he appreciated every day there. But everyone else sort of like, you know, we did a rehearsal, everyone back to their dressing room.
It's interesting how that happens too, I think. You know what I mean? Because at the start of it, everybody's gung-ho and all in. You know what I mean? And then it becomes a job like anything else, like you said.
Yeah, I guess it forget quickly.
Yeah. You do A Life Goes On, which was a huge show back then. What was that like?
Oh my God, right.
Yeah, it's a very, I watched it. I think it's very brief. It's a very brief scene. You take them, I think you go to the beach or something like that. You got the boom box and it's if you recall this at all.
I don't remember my role, but I remember Kelly Martin being amazing and we've remained friendly. We were, you know, friends back then and we're still, you know, social media friends and Patty LuPone. I don't remember what my role was, but it was like shot on the Warner Brothers lot, mm-hmm. which, you know, it was all a magical time. When you start acting and you start jumping on sets like Roseanne or, you know, you're walking on the Warner Brothers lot, or even showing up to the 90210 set, which we'll get to, yeah. It's all so magical.
Yeah. And Step by Step, you said, you know, you kind of referenced John Ritter before, so you had to be aware of Three's Company and how iconic those actors were. So to do a show with Suzanne Somers had to be pretty dope at that time. Yeah.
Yeah. And I had also grown up watching Dallas.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So he was like bigger than life to me, Patrick Duffy. But I think the lesson from all that stuff is that the only thing that matters is the work. What you're doing in rehearsal, what you're doing in front of the director, and when the cameras are rolling, everything else is just, you know, fluff or bonus or nonsense. That's really all that matters.
Is it difficult to navigate the, and I'm bringing this up because we're going to 90210, and I've talked to a lot of guest stars that have done 90210, and you know, when they come into 90210, it's a different environment. They're teenage, you're all teenagers or maybe older than teenagers playing teenagers, right? You know, we talked about Roseanne having, you know, some publicity and all that stuff. 90210 had tension. It had a lot of things going on, you know, on the set. These actors just became huge, and you come into it right as these actors are blowing up at a level that is almost Beatle-like.
Yeah.
So walk me through some what that's like.
Well,
and how did you get 90210?
Oh, I had done a series for Aaron Spelling, it called Jack of Hearts.
Okay.
In Las Vegas. And it only went like 6 or 7 episodes. And when that show ended, he not only got me a movie of the week, I remember he put me in touch with the producer. I flew to North Carolina and shot this movie. Then I came home and he had me come in and read for this role on 90210, which he said would be very controversial. It would be a really interesting part for me. And he was so good like that. I think I got it because of Aaron. And I was good friends, not good friends. I was friendly with Luke. My roommate in LA was really best friends with him. So we would see each other all the time. And he had this potbelly pig as a pet. And I remember hanging out at his place, like in Hollywood. And when I got to the set that first day, he was like so ingratiating, introduced me to everybody, made me feel so comfortable. And the work was very interesting. You know, that character that, you know.
Kyle, yeah.
Yeah.
When you did read that, I mean, you had to know like this was going to be meatier than some of the other guest star stuff that you had had. So this is a pretty big part, and it's a very significant part. I mean, it is one of those parts in 90210, I think, that's, you know, we can always, everybody throws the word iconic around, but it definitely becomes that, right? Because of what the character is, the character, I don't know that he ever says that he's gay, but he's definitely exploring it, right? I don't know that it comes
out. Yeah, which is so honest, right? I mean, it's not like one day you're like, oh, I'm a homosexual. This is how a teenager figures it out. He tries to date the hottest girl on the beach and
has,
you know, I mean, it was written so honestly. And then, you know, if that episode was done today, it would have just, it would blend in with a lot of the other, you know, not even controversial. It just, you know, mainstream storyline today, but, you know, in the early 90s,
it's a huge deal.
Risky episode.
And it's a risky episode for you to play, you know, I mean, it's a tough character for you to play. How do you develop Kyle? And you don't have a lot of time. Like, this is one of the things that I think is interesting when I talk to people on this thing so far. It's like, you know, we'll talk about Blossom in a minute, where you have a lot of time to develop the character, but you're in 90210, you have 3 episodes, and I don't know if it was concurrent. I think you come back at some point, but how do you develop Kyle as an actor?
I think it was very relatable because it was written so subtly. You know, he picks the most beautiful girl on the beach, Kelly, and he's just not into her. And he's confused by that. So it was, and Jenny was amazing. And we hung out, we became friends around that time. And we were we would hang out after work and, you know, even after I was done with the episode, it was all just very comfortable. It was a safe space to work down in that Santa Monica beach, I remember. And, you know, and Charles Rosen, and I forget who directed it, they were all just so supportive and made it a very safe space to, you know, to play that role.
Going back to watching those guys become so famous, and in that moment, you're sort of on the outskirts of that, right? I mean, you're a visiting actor to this set. What was that like to see?
Out of everything I've ever done, you know, and Blossom, you know, was a top 20 show, and it aired right after Fresh Prince. It became pretty big, and Sabrina was a hit show. Of anything I've ever done, I've never experienced anything like what happened after that summer. When 90210 aired those summer episodes, mm-hmm. when the rest of the world was doing repeats,
yeah,
it exploded. And I remember I was in a dressing room on another show I was doing, and on the cover of Rolling Stone, there was, you know, Luke and Jason and Shannon, and I was like, oh my goodness. And I remember going, you know, sometimes when you're in LA, you don't realize.
Sure.
Then you go somewhere in middle America, or, you know, I had gone to New Orleans with my roommate, Doug Ellen, who you know, went on to create Entourage. And he took me to my first jazz fest in New Orleans. And I felt like a Beatle. He was like, what the frick is going on here? Like, it was crowds, and like, I couldn't believe how many people. I mean, it's all like 18 to 25 year olds, you know, that are at,
sure,
you know, at Jazz Fest or at Tipitina's at mm-hmm. night. And it was insane. It was a really a lesson in the power of the medium that we do, how many people it can reach all at once on a show like that at that time.
So do you think 90210 is definitely what catapults you into this, like, even though, because we just talked about Hey Dude, and that's super, you know, it's super popular now in a way, but 90210 is this whole other level of a juggernaut. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so then I go in and read for a guest star on Blossom, mm-hmm. who they had just finished, or they were just finishing their first season. And I go in to read with Mayim Bialik, and she's all giddy about 90210. I feel like, yeah, I did a good audition and we clicked together. But I feel like her having seen 90210, she probably went, you know, to Don Rio or Paul Witt and said, I want this guy to be my boyfriend. And so then I did that one episode. It was the season finale of season one, and they literally called the next day to offer me three seasons.
That's amazing. I watched this too. I watched your debut when you and Blossom start, you know, start dating, and it's a really awesome stuff. It's also another like iconic television moment, because you get brought in and there's like a cliffhanger, right? Like you ask her to run away with you and all of this stuff, and it's really awesome stuff, man. Do you remember coming into Blossom, another big show? What was that like for you? You know, you have this, you're a Beatle, sort of, right? An offshoot of the Beatles, because you've the 90210.
I'm like the fifth Beatle.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. And now you come into Blossom. What is that like for you, man?
I think I was really nervous the first episode. Again, live audience.
90210, no live audience. No live audience.
90210, no live audience. You get to, you know, work it out on set. I don't know. The live audience thing to this day still... It's an excitement, but a nervousness, you know? And, you know, Joey Lawrence was kind of like the alpha male in the cast. And he had a lot of people around him, you know, his mom and his agents, and they were all protecting his thing. And Mayim had, you know, her name's on the show. So she had her people, and it felt like a big deal and maybe some pissing contests on who's controlling it. And
here comes David Lasher.
And I just, you know, I it was about the work, and I loved working with Maya. I mean, she's so talented. She respects the work, and that's what I clung to. And we became very good friends, Maya and I. We did a 2-hour Blossom movie in Paris. Mm-hmm. I remember after season two, I went, think how great this is. I got a movie called The Flood for NBC. We shot in Australia for 4 weeks. I get home ready to start, you know, season three of Blossom. And they say, we're going to Paris for 4 weeks to shoot a 2-hour movie.
Wow. Yeah.
And Michael Stoyanov, who played the older brother, was seriously one of my best friends. I think
he's such a talented actor. He also does a 90210 later, and it's some of the most powerful stuff we've ever seen on 90210. He does a whole AIDS thing with Jenny, and it's, I don't know if you're aware of that, but it's so good. He's just such a talent. So tell me about working with some of the other actors. Joey Lawrence is, you know, a big part of that show. What is he like at that time?
Joey at the time, like I said, I feel like he had a lot of people around him, and I never felt like we had a real personal connection. We worked great together. He was cracking jokes on the set, but then he was back to his stuff. And I think there was tension between his team and Mayim's team. So I never really felt like the connection I had with Mayim or with Michael. And even Ted Wass, we you know, I'd go over to his house and watch football games. Joey had a lot of people around him. But ironically, Joey ends up doing a sitcom with Melissa Joan Hart. This is years later, called Melissa and Joey for Freeform. And Melissa has me come on and do 3 episodes. And Joey and I really, I think at that point, on a real personal level, became friends.
It's interesting, as a guest star, even though you become a series regular, and I want to ask you about what that's like, but as a guest star, when you walk into the world, you have this sort of eye at watching what's happening, and you have to learn sort of how to navigate the politics or the drama of what's going on behind the scenes. How hard is that as a guest star?
Well, I think I was like 10 out of 13 regular. So I wasn't in every episode. And, you know, when I would get a script that I wasn't in, it was very hard. Mm-hmm. I felt really left out. Like, am I not doing enough? Or are they just adhering to, you know, they're going to give me 15 out of 22, like they're supposed to contractually, or am I not doing a good enough job? But, you know, you learn to get over that. I mean, you know, I don't know if you know Paul Witt and Tony Thomas. You know, Paul Witt's a pretty intimidating guy. Don Rio is a sweetheart, mm-hmm. but I knew that he was the one writing the words. So him and his wife, Judith, I just was intimidated by, I was intimidated a lot of the time on that set, because I knew I was probably always under review. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
I do know.
They could write me off at any time. You know, I'm Blossom's boyfriend. Or they could do what they did and stretch it into a 3-season, you know, character arc. But it was, I felt like I was fighting for my job every week.
And it's probably true too, because I've talked to people about being a guest star, and sometimes they give you the media stuff, right? Even the stuff that you get at first, it's like, you're this, you know, spoiler to Blossom's world, right? You know, you're going to upset the apple cart in a way. And that's a big deal. But I mean, honestly, if you were somebody else that didn't deliver and nail it, that part could have been written off anytime. But because you kept delivering, I don't know if you have this perspective now, but obviously you're doing something right on set and as an actor and as a performer in the role that they definitely decided to keep you around. I think it's the work with Mayim. You know, like, there is some really awesome stuff happening there. And tell me about her. You said that she had a lot of people around her too, but were you able to get those moments where you're able to work through scenes and connect and all of that?
Yeah, working with her was incredible. She's such a pro. We could talk things out. We were very good friends outside of work. I remember, I mean, when we were in Paris, she's like, U2's playing at, I forget the park. What's the park in Paris that?
I don't know, but
like their Central Park. But we, you know, we went, we like took a blanket and we just saw like U2 do a free concert in the park. We just, we were very close. And so the work was easy and safe again and comfortable to explore with her. And, you know, and with comedy, it's almost like a pass fail. You can tell how you're doing if the laughs are there.
Right. Especially with the live audience.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we did have our dramatic moments, but it was basically, you know, am I being funny? And so I felt really good about the work, but still, you know, when I would pass Paul Witt or Don in the hallway, I would just get tense, you know?
I do get it. In terms of the character, Vinny, how close were you to that character?
Not that close. Vinny was like, you know, they thought he was a rebel, but he was really a kid whose parents didn't pay attention to him. So he acted tough, but he was all heart. So I, you know, I related to him, but I didn't have that sort of neglected, you know, probably painful childhood that he had, you know?
Sure.
Which is why he loved Blossom and her normal family, you know? He was like, he spent every second there.
Talking, comparing 90210 versus this experience, you said 90210 was Beatle-like. Did you have a lot of similar response by being on Blossom? Were you getting recognized now for that as well?
Yeah.
And I mean by people like fans and stuff like that getting recognized.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we were on our little stage at Sunset Gower, you know, and you'd have to leave LA to see what the response was. But I think at the time, back then you would do like signings at malls and stuff like that. And yeah, there were malls with like three levels of kids, and they would have to take me in the back and sneak me out the back. And it was only a short, you know, it was a 3-season run, but it was, yeah, I remember it, my parents would come. There was one in Long Island, New York, and my parents were like, whoa.
What is happening here?
Yeah.
And you have you do Clueless, the TV show, but I think when you were with me last time, you said that they were considering you for Clueless, the movie. Do you have that story? Yeah. Or what is that story again?
Yeah, I read many times to play the Paul Rudd role in the movie. And I read with Alicia, and I guess, I don't know if she didn't like me, or I ended up not getting it. But then like a year later, they called me and said, Amy Heckerling wants to offer you the role in the series. You know, you were second choice for the movie. She's producing and directing the pilot, and everyone else is back except for Alicia, which this girl, Rachel Blanchard, ended up playing Cher. Yeah. Oh, and Michael Lerner replaced the Tortelli guy as the dad.
Yeah.
Donald Faison and I became really good friends. Elisa Donovan's still such a great friend of mine.
She's awesome. I love her. Yeah. She's
awesome. And we shot on Paramount. So like, yeah, it was Clueless. I did one season, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then I got Sabrina. And then stayed on the Paramount lot for another few years doing Sabrina. So,
well, tell me about the Sabrina experience, because that's another one of those big, big shows. You know what I mean? That just like, and you get, you know, I think you did some other stuff right before that. You were doing a couple of TV movies. You did A Touch by an Angel, right?
Oh my God. You want to hear a crazy guest star story? Yeah. Touch by an Angel. I was in Salt Lake City playing an Olympic skier. And we shot all our scenes except the ski stuff because they didn't have snow. So they start shooting the next episode and they keep me in the hotel. I think it was like 2 weeks until snow. And they were going to, as soon as it snowed, they were going to, boom, schedule my day of, skiing. But I was wandering around Salt Lake City for 2 weeks while everyone else was working on another episode. It was really surreal.
I can't even imagine what that's like, because you can't leave. You can't take another job. You have to wait until the snow comes.
Oh, my God.
What did you do? How did you entertain yourself that 2 weeks?
There was a mall across.
There's no internet, man, you know.
Right? I was a little delirious. I remember calling my wife at the time. I don't know if I was married yet.
So I think it's like 99 that it came out. So it's probably around that time that you shot it.
Right? I probably got married right after that. But yeah, she's like, are you ever coming home? Like, what are you doing? I was trapped in Salt Lake in a Sheraton or something.
Oh my God. That's crazy. All right. So then, but then you do Sabrina and you get Sabrina. What is she like, Melissa, and coming onto that set? Is it like now by this point you've done these other shows and you're kind of ready for it? Or is it still every time you walk in, you have to like learn the new, what is this world going to be like? Do you have to like reset yourself to learn the politics on a set, or is it not like that because you're aware of Melissa?
Well, again, Melissa and I had done a movie for NBC a few years earlier. So we spent the summer together in Charleston. And I mean, I just love her. I mean, she's like family to me. Her mom, Paula, her stepfather, Leslie, the whole family. I mean, we would spend every weekend at Paula's house. I can't tell you how often the cast and the crew were together on that show. It was the most comfortable place I've ever worked. It was such a fun job, and they had great directors coming in all the time. And Paula, you know, was the queen bee, and I felt like she was, you know, like very maternal towards me, which made it a lot more comfortable, like the Blossom situation where Paul Witt's in a, you know, tie walking down and I didn't know any day if I was going to get fired. I didn't feel that on Sabrina.
Right. After Sabrina, what's going on with you then? You know, there's a little bit of a gap of like, you know, you do a TV series, but do you want to still do more guest star? Like, where are you in your career at that point?
What happened after that? I think I still got some pilots and TV movies, stuff like that, but I started writing around that time.
That's what I wanted to get to. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it took a while. I mean, it took Sabrina ended 2003. That took several years for me to get my first film produced.
Which is My Sister, right? Is that the film that you...
Yeah, it's just Sister. The okay. International release was My Sister, but it's...
Okay, so Sister, yeah.
Sister, yeah, with Barbara Hershey and Grace Kaufman and Reed Scott, Ileana Douglas. I mean, we got such an amazing cast, but it took years to develop the script, raise the financing, and then finally just show up and do it.
I don't think a lot of people get that experience. You were somebody who could probably in that time period easily have done other shows, but you were really focused on wanting to make, to get into directing, get into writing, and get something of your own. Was that stuff always kind of circulating in your brain, scripts and scenes and all that stuff? Or did it kind of just, when did it happen for you that you wanted to write, I guess?
I guess after Sabrina, within a couple years, I was also at a place where I was in my 30s and I was, you know, I'd get close to the roles that I thought I should play, the dad, the cop, the lawyer, the doctor. And it would always be, he looks too young. And I was like, enough with this. Like, you know, at that point I had my first daughter, you know, I was like, I got sick of auditioning. You know, I'd been doing it since I was 14. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't fun anymore. I didn't like going in and just begging someone to let me work. And then, you know, the realization that no one could stop me from writing, even if it's gonna take me 5 years to get a movie made, you know, I'm in control of it.
Well, how hard was that? The getting the financing and doing all that. What was that step? Like, you write a script, it's great, you know, and then that next part is equally challenging in some ways as auditioning in a way, like getting your movie made. And someone who's made some documentaries, I know it is not an easy process. What was that like for you?
Trying to raise money is worse than auditioning.
It really is. And it's not something that you've ever really, as an actor, you don't really need to do. You know, you just need to audition.
Right. Yeah. That's one thing I appreciate now, that when I did go in and audition for something, someone else spent a year or two developing it, going
raising the money, casting everybody else,
right,
figuring it all out. Yeah, exactly.
At least
yeah.
I know it's getting made.
Yeah.
But I had some very good friends, my brother-in-law, my friend Warren Lichtenstein and Jeff Altman financed the film. They really believed in the not only the script and the story, but the message of the movie about over-diagnosing and over-medicating children. It was very topical. And then we were able to get such a great cast. And then we got into Tribeca, and Jane Rosenthal wrote me an email saying, this film is so important. We want to put it in a spotlight section. We're going to give you 3 nights of screenings.
Amazing.
And then, yeah, we did like a year of festivals. We sold to Showtime for a 2-year exclusive, which, you know, the movie never made its money back.
It's hard to, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't spend that much on it, but like, they kept, you know, some people were like, oh, pay for your own theatrical or do this or that. And when Showtime came to us, and a good friend of mine, Scott Kundell, who was VP of CBS, which owns Showtime, he's the one that brought it to Showtime. And I just thought, this is the perfect audience for this movie. And I just want it to be seen by the audience that will appreciate it, you know?
Exactly. And at that point, it becomes that. And so... doing that experience writing, did you utilize any of your acting experiences while you were writing scenes?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. I think being an actor helps you as a writer and a director. And it helps you working with the actors. You know, I mean, Grace Kaufman was one of the finest actors I've worked with, and her mother, who runs an acting studio in LA, had her character like a spectrum of 1 to 10, where she was in her doses of medication. Because you know, during the movie, my character yanks her off all the meds that her, you know, messed up mother had her on.
Right.
So she goes through this withdrawal period and then comes out the other side. But you know, you shoot out of sequence, we shoot by location. So her mother would go, okay, and would work with her. We're on number 3 here, where you're still on your meds. You're angry that you have to come live with your brother. You're scared that your mother's in the hospital. And like, she has a new movie coming out. I think she's going to be a huge star. And I thought that when she was 12, and the actors on the movie were amazing. I feel like being an actor helped me with the writing of the script and with working with those actors.
And then you do Cruisers and Shakers. Tell me about this.
So I started working with a company called Group 9 Media, which is a big digital media company with all these assets, the Now, Thrillist, the Dodo, Pop Sugar. I mean, you know, and this is where the work is now. It doesn't take 5 years to get a movie made. You know, Group 9 looked at the show. They brought in a brand to sponsor the show. We had a very nice budget. Mm-hmm. I had very limitations on what I could write. And I wanted to tell a story about 20-somethings having to hustle in the shared economy and drive and earn money while they're pursuing bigger dreams, you know, like a modern day taxi kind of thing.
I love it. Yeah. I mean, and were you going to do more of that? And then that was in 19, but 20, what did 2020 affect you in any way with projects that you were going to work on and all of that?
Yeah, we were, I had outlined season two, mm-hmm. and everything got put on hold right in March of 2020. And then we sold the show to a streaming service called Ficto.
Okay.
Which I still think is, I still think we'll do season two with them, mm-hmm. but they were involved in a merger and are waiting for their financing and credit line for production. So that's on hold. But then I have another thing I'm, you know, with Group Nine, two other things that I'm doing with them right now. And it's just, it's a faster pace of work than trying to do a feature film or network TV. And it's just, I'm very grateful to have that digital content space to work.
Absolutely, man. So more stuff definitely coming out of you in the near future. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I will
keep us posted.
Yeah, I'll keep you posted on the next stuff.
When you look back on that time period of Blossom and 90210, do you have mostly all good memories from that when you look back at it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, when I was 18, what was I had applied to NYU, to the Tisch School, and mm-hmm. I got in. And my parents were very adamant, you know, if you're not going to go, you better keep your space there. So for 3 years, I had to write a letter to the Tisch School explaining how I was being productive in the industry that I would be studying there and why that I, you know, asking them to hold my place for the next fall. So when people ask me, do I regret not going to college? I regret, you know, because my daughter's now at Tulane and I'm visiting schools with my son and I see like this 4 years is incredible, but I feel like I had that, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like you're saying, the camaraderie with all these actors running around LA, working in the industry we were interested in and having, you know, having to be professionals, but having a lot of fun. So I look back on it with the greatest memories.
Did you see Soleil's movie Kid 90? And did you, what did you think of it? And did you relate to some of that?
I did because I was, you know, I was here around that time, maybe a little bit later. I can't relate to how early she started acting.
Sure.
You know, she was so young.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like she did an amazing job on the movie. And
it's fantastic.
Her perspective of living through it at that time. But she was, you know, I feel like by the time I was 14, I had, you know, my dad coached my little leagues. I had my formative years and it was my decision to go run into Manhattan and go around on auditions.
Sure.
As opposed to her experience, which I feel like was tougher, but I'm glad she got to tell her story and she's such a talented girl too.
Some fan questions. A fan wanted me to ask you, did you, when back in the day in the 90s, when you would get fan mail, did you actually read your fan mail or was that some of it or was someone doing that for you? And what was it like to get fan mail? That must have been intense.
I was in my early 20s when I was on Blossom and I did have an assistant. Her name is Angie Cobbs, who's awesome. She's a producer now. I think she did answer a lot of my fan mail. She'd send pictures out. But to just explain how disorganized I was, I had an apartment on Burton Way and Robertson, a two bedroom. The second bedroom had all my boxes from moving. And I had, for 2 years, I never unpacked the boxes.
Got it.
So to organize fan mail was like beyond what I was capable of.
Not happening. Yeah. No. But I'm sure a lot of them now are writing you on social media. So it's all
a lot easier.
It's all worked out. Yeah. All these years later, they got you. So yeah. It's much easier, right? I wanted to, last question about social media. I was talking to someone this week and they were like, can you imagine what the 90s would have been like if social media was in the mix? What's your take on social media now versus if it had been around in the 90s? Would it have been helpful? Would it have been, you know, what would it have been like in your perspective?
I don't know. I think there are arguments to it being, it would have been helpful, and arguments to where it might have gotten me into trouble. And again, I don't know if Blossom or 90210 or even Sabrina would have gotten that big of an audience had people had the distractions of TikTok and Instagram and Netflix, Amazon, you know, Hulu.
All of that.
Yeah, we had those audiences because there weren't a million distractions. So I'm glad that I came up during a time without social media. And I feel bad for people who get caught up in saying the wrong thing. I mean, you see what happens.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, also I feel like in the 90s, it was about the work, right? Like you wanted to do the next job so that you can do more work. And with the influencers and all of that stuff, some people are getting hired because they're an influencer now. And I don't know that that is about the work. It becomes about who's going to bring eyes to a series, right? So I think it's just a different era.
Yeah.
You know,
my daughter Chelsea, this is a quick story. Her babysitter is named Jax, J-A-X. And she, during COVID, started writing these little songs on TikTok. So she asked Chelsea, can you come do a song with me through, you know, the kid I babysit's perspective? So she ends up doing this song with Jax. We end up, Jax goes on the Ellen show and just completely blows up. And I was thinking, like, what does Jax want from this? Like, what do these influencers want? And sure enough, she's a musician. She gets a deal with a big record label. She has, you know, three hit songs right now. And Chelsea has these videos with her. One of them has 110 million views. It's wow. Like one of the top TikTok. Yeah, it's insane. And so I asked Chelsea, do you want to do anything from this? And she said, I really want to act. So she did her first thing 2 weekends ago. I was on the set with Chelsea in this short film, which they're using as a sizzle reel to sell a series. But to your point, I was telling Chelsea, you know, you could do TikTok for fun, or now you have hundreds of thousands of followers. Like, you have to decide, what do I want from this? Do I want to be a musician? Do I want to be an actor? Otherwise, yeah, what is the point?
Right. And the thing is, like, you know, for you, I'm curious, I didn't know this. So what is this experience like? Because now your parents went with you to set, and you know, and when you wanted to be an actor, did you want this for her? And what do you think of this now? Now that you're on the other side of the game, right? You're the parent with the kid actor.
Yeah. I mean, I told her a few things. I said, number one, if you start getting upset when you don't get things, we're gonna stop. And number two, if it takes away from your schoolwork, your club soccer, and all the things that you love, we're going to stop. This should just be fun. And sure enough, her second audition, she got it. We went on set and it was so much fun. I mean, she loved every second of it, even the sitting around, and, you know, she was watching all the makeup people and the wardrobe. And then when the cameras were rolling, the director was awesome and she had a great experience. And as soon as it's not a great experience, no harm done, we're done.
Yeah, I love it, man. Well, thank you for taking your time here. This has been fun catching up and going through all your stuff, man. I think the world of you. I think you're such a talented actor, and I can't wait to see what else you got coming down the line, man.
You too, man. Congrats on the new podcast, and appreciate me up anytime. I'd love talking to you.
All right, you too, man. All right, cool. Have a good one.
All right. You too. Take care.
Okay, that was David Lasher, a really, really awesome interview. He's a great guest, and I hope to do more with him down the line. Next week, super excited, Melanie Smith. She's done Seinfeld. She was Rachel on Seinfeld. She did a Curb, some Star Trek, and definitely 90210 fans will know her. So I'm super excited for that. That's next week on Guest Star. And if there are guest stars you would like to see me interview, send them to me at our Instagram account, Guest Star Show, and I will do my best to make it happen. Anyway, see you all next week. I hope you had a wonderful holiday, and this has been Guest Star.